doesn't sound like a nerd,
but the computers are still scared of him.
Helping you gain the upper hand with your computer, here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
Many different items in store for you here on Computer Talk Radio this week. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact your life. Therefore, we're going to go in a number of different directions. Keith M. Cedar is going to talk about speccing out your next computer. Marty's going to talk about a Bosch 18-volt 9 cutoff saw kit. Steve Kesky about train technology. On the scam series, don't trust anyone who does a cold call via email with your information. And that I hope that's abundantly clear, but yeah. Work-life balance is even more important for IT workers, and we'll talk about that. And I do have a number of listener questions. Tobias asked, I need software, but IT won't let me. What do I do? Noel, why do people believe tech myths that are easily disproven? Nina, why do techs ask me the same questions I already answered? And Nathan, why do I have to subscribe to everything instead of buying it outright? If you miss any of those items here on this week's Computer Talk Radio, the website where you can find the podcast is ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. You can scroll down to where it says listen here, or you can also check out ways to reach out to us and ask your questions. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. Of course, you can phone me at 888-NERD. 888. That's 888-637-3888. And I will answer your computer questions and address your technology concerns. Let's dive into the news from this past week. And we need to take you back. I'm going to give you a little bit of an opener. We're going to take you back to 2020. And there was a battle that started between Epic Games, those are the makers of Fortnite, and Apple over payments. All right, one of Apple's great money makers has been the fees for apps as they run through their app store. And this is about 30% of every dollar that you send through there. Epic Games tried to do an end run around that. They disputed it. And Apple bumped the app off the store. After years of court wrangling, Apple pretended to allow it in 2024 and yet extended their hands out still for 27% of revenues on the Epic website using a particular loophole that they found in the judge's initial ruling. So Epic Games responded with a complaint. And this week, the judge revised that injunction against Apple with a massive setback that eliminates, in quite clear wording, how little that Apple can interfere with the link out to the Epic Games website. And this actually has far-reaching implications for a lot of other apps that may want to take their money directly, getting 100% of the monies off of their own website versus paying that money to Apple. We're going to see how Apple responds in the coming weeks and months and all of that, and we'll let you know when that happens. Now, Samsung had their big event this week for phones and the like. Announced were the S25 series of phones with upgraded cameras, upgraded displays, and naturally new artificial intelligence features as part of One UI 7. That's their latest skin or presentation, if you will, on the Android operating system. Along the way, they focused on their own take on AI and all of the capabilities on a phone, but also their personal data engine. All right, so this new feature, this new assembly of AI on your phone is going to enable features and processing locally on the phone rather than cloud-based. That sounds very familiar, like much of what Apple is presenting. They did tease a few things, an upcoming trifold phone. So currently they just fold in half. Now they're going to do a trifold. And they did also talk about an extended reality or XR headset. I'm not really secure in folding screens, and I'm not really fond of what I've seen so far for extended reality. So we'll watch this. We'll keep an eye on all of that. Bitcoin let's talk about Bitcoin. And I don't touch on it often because, well, I think of all of this cryptocurrency stuff as currency speculation and really gambling, because you can put your money in a number of different directions. But I'm going to give you a quick crash course in Bitcoin mining. What this is people can earn Bitcoins by having their computers crunch numbers, much like you might prove out a prime number or something like that. As mineable coins are found, the work to find new ones becomes more difficult. That's kind of why Bitcoin itself keeps rising up. For years, people would buy increasingly more powerful computers and then mine coins, or really partial coins, and so forth. This week, someone did the math, and while it used to be cheap to mine a Bitcoin, you might be able to do that for about $1,000, and back when Bitcoin was worth about $1,500, today it's kind of changed. It's shifted on up. Today it's going to cost you $137,000 in electricity alone to do it. That's not even including the hardware and all of that. This is more expensive than the Bitcoin itself is worth. Therefore, it's going to make it less profitable. Now, if you're thinking about this for other cryptocurrencies, sure, there are other options out there, but each of them is less ideal. Someday, yes, the Bitcoin values may shift, but it's not something at this point that most people are willing to chase. I mean, do you have $137,000 just hanging around that you want to put into a computer and into electricity bills just so you can earn a $90,000, $80,000 Bitcoin, whatever it's at right now? Yeah, probably not. Now, Elon Musk, he made a mint off of electric cars. So what did Jeff Bezos decide to do? The same. Slate Auto was announced this week. It's backed by Jeff Bezos and a couple of other really rich guys. And I looked at it. It's kind of neat. It has a look similar to like a Ford Bronco, or maybe like one of the variations on something like the Jeep Renegade, but a little bit smaller. Interestingly enough, this unit is going to come in at about $20,000 after the various federal credits, but it's not aiming at the same market. So what have they done? Well, they've scraped this back. They've dialed this back to something you're probably going to raise an eyebrow on. No infotainment system. That's a big one. Instead, they're relying upon you to provide your smartphone or your tablet for any kind of usage in the car. They even set it up so that you can bring your own Bluetooth boombox rather than installing a stereo. Now, you can put in speakers, but there's a lot of questions going on there. There's no power windows or power door locks or any of these features. So I'm kind of scratching my head on this. It's going to be interesting to see if it's available on Amazon, Jeff Bezos' largest claim to date. And I will tell you, they are taking pre-orders right now, something like $50 or whatever, to kind of put your name in the hat for when this comes out in the next year or so. Speaking of vehicles, Lyft has a new feature that's aimed at the older crowd. Lyft Silver rethinks the process and moves towards an interface that encourages senior citizens that may be technologically challenged with simpler options, voice support, and even prioritizing cars that are easier to get in and out of. Other features help your doctor order a ride for you and even set up for healthcare providers to pay for some of those rides to those appointments. Further, families can pay for a Lyft on behalf of their elderly family. So that's pretty cool. This is rolling out in about a week, and it will be accessible through the normal app. I like this. This is innovative thinking that may just get those old folks traveling again. Last up, I stay mostly out of the political fray, so this is merely reporting on numbers and a situation that's evolving. It is no secret that some items may be bumping prices and blaming it on tariffs. One of the big ones this week was Microsoft, who announced the increase of their Xbox hardware by about 20%. and further announcing that their games are going to start releasing at higher price points as well, which is a head scratcher because that's software, and I don't know that that's subject to tariffs. So Apple has indicated less of an impact is coming, and there's all kind of talk out there about who's going to post tariff amounts when you purchase and who won't, from Amazon to Walmart. Anyways, there is a lot of a push for many to buy tech now. But if you don't need it, don't buy it just to avoid higher prices. Instead, increase your budget, look around for your options, and weather the storm instead. Coming up next, Noelle asks, why do people believe tech myths that are easily disproven? That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
Noelle had a question. Why do people believe tech myths that are easily disproven? Noelle reached out to me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. And this is a great question. Noelle's question of why do people believe tech myths that are easily disproven? This is something that I go through on a regular basis. I will tell you amongst what I'm going to share over the course of the next few minutes. I've actually promoted some of these until they basically were disproven or they just sort of evolved and dropped off. Things change in technology on a regular basis. And of course, all of this, it's like hearing this cooking tip that sounds ridiculous, but everybody just keeps repeating it anyway. There's one of them really comes to mind. Placing a wet phone in rice to dry it off. And, you know, initially it sounded good, and perhaps it did work for a while. It was something that it was a last-ditch effort to try to draw the moisture out of the phone, but we found that it happened, it was successful so rarely that we started to think about this as everybody in the industry, they're going, maybe this was already okay. Maybe it was a matter of that the water didn't get to the components. Maybe that's why it seemed to work. And then we get into other things like using incognito mode makes you invisible. And we know, and we've known all the way along, that incognito mode does reduce the amount of information that is being sent out. It reduces the amount of information that's being kept on the local machine. But it is not foolproof. It's not extensive. It is something that does help a little bit in reducing some of the information, but it's not going to... It's not the end all be all. It's not like going on out and doing this and having a VPN and also a lot of different hardware and software that's in place to block the information. I'll tell you, you go to a website, and when you go to that website, it has to know certain things about the browser that you're working on. It has to know certain things about your computer. And a lot of this information is sent out, and amongst this is your IP address. Your IP address is your network address on the internet. Well, that's already been shared out multiple times when you haven't used incognito mode, when you haven't been locking your system down. So you go on out and you go to Google and they know your IP address. You go to Google, they know your IP address. You go to Google in an incognito mode, they still have your IP address. They're still very sure that you are you, just that you're locking down some of the information that's going out there. And then we get into other things like the waterproof rating specifications, and those rating certifications are, well, they're, so I wear a watch. It is 100 meter water resistant. Well, that actually only says that, you know, I can go swimming in a swimming pool and I can do laps. But for me to take that watch down to 100 meters, it's not actually going to be fully working there. It could allow water in. So some of these different certifications are off the wall. So we keep believing these tech myths. We keep overlooking some of the fine print that's in there. We keep going through all of these different directions. And yeah, all of these different things that we hear, well, repetition will create belief. And if enough people out there, they hear this and they repeat it and they share it, it starts to feel true, even if it's not. And I'll tell you, we can even go further than that. We can start thinking about rumors that are based upon fear. Stories about 5G causing illness or Bluetooth frying your brain, they go viral because they provoke this emotional response. One of the other items that we always think about, oh, you've got to put your phone in airplane mode whenever you're on an airplane because you don't want the airplane to crash. And we get scared by that. We start thinking, I've got to do this. Otherwise, you know, my plane's going to become a lawn dart. And that's scary to a lot of people, and we fear this. I'll tell you, we accidentally, on the plane, somebody is accidentally, multiple people are going to accidentally not put it in airplane mode. And we're going to see every couple of flights, you know, if we were to really do a deep dive, someone has actually used the phone on that. We can go back to 9/11. We can recall that people were on their smartphones on 9/11. The planes didn't crash. The planes, well, let me rephrase that. Oh, that is, you know what I mean. The planes still arrived their unfortunate destinations. So look, all of these different things, we've got all of these fear-based rumors and they continue with us. Most people do not have the technical background to verify these claims. So they do trust sources that sound authoritative. And this all leads to a lack of understanding. Oh, yeah. Hey, Benjamin on Computer Talk Radio said this, so it must be true. I try to make sure it's true. I try to, all the way along, cover actual technical information that is accurate, that is going to be useful, that is going to be the right thing. And yes, along the way, we do find information. Look, mainstream media does sometimes get it wrong. Journalists do not have tech expertise overall, leading to misleading reports in regards to AI, in regards to cyber threats, in regards to encryption. Over the years, I've sat there listening to some of these news reports. Oh, the latest thing that's going to crash your computer. AI is going to take over tomorrow. Skynet is rising. I mean, look, I hear all of these things and I go, that's not quite correct. That's not quite right. But they've heard this and they've been told to say this and they've been told to say this by non-technical people. Hey, we've got this story. You got to report on it. So they got to report on it. A lot of this really goes in a number of different directions. Yes, people are going to believe things out there, all of these different tech myths, because we keep hearing them. We keep talking about them. We keep going through all of this fact checking on the part of individuals who are not technologically informed, inclined, and so forth. It takes a lot of work because you have to understand things that you do not understand already. So you have to go through and you have to do there's a large learning curve. It is easier to believe a simple, scary claim than to spend time researching whether it's accurate or not. And I want to encourage you, if you come across tech myths, if you come across any tech myth and you want to know if it is true or not, feel free to reach out to me at computertalkradio.com. I'll go through and I'll provide you some information, whatever information I can find or what information I know, and we can go through these. I'll tell you, I'm going to share one more tech myth. Ejecting your flash drive unsafely can kill your data. And we keep hearing about this. As a matter of fact, some of the tech companies promote this. And yes, you should eject the drive. And the part of the process of ejecting the drive is making sure that all of the information that's in wherever, all of those information flows are cut off. And then you can unplug it. But the reality is today, I've been unplugging them all along because I know, hey, I haven't written anything to this flash drive in a matter of the last 2 hours. There's nothing sitting in the ether out there waiting to go to this flash drive. So I know it's not going to destroy it. Look, critical thinking and reliable sources are going to be the best defense for you, me, everybody else against tech misinformation. Those cooking tips you hear, they may sound ridiculous and you may think you're going to do it anyways and it's going to work, but yeah, think it over. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's just one of the ways to reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back to you with answers to your computer questions, your technology concerns. Keith McCedor joins me now, and Keith is our Apple expert. He talks about all kinds of things Apple all the time. What do you have for us this week?
Well, that's why they call me My Mac Guru, Benjamin. And I will tell you, one of the things that is of paramount importance for Mac users is the decision to get a new Mac. And it's pretty straightforward. And a lot of people go, you know what? My Mac is old enough. I think I want a new one. What do I need to do? And they don't really think it through, and they just run off to some retail location, whether it's the Apple Store or Best Buy or some well-known photography and camera store in a major metropolitan city. And
you have a particular one in mind there, I know.
There are a number of stores like that, and they are a lot of places you can get good deals. But the reality of it is – in my experience, most people don't take the time to really go through some step-by-step operations to make sure that they not only get the best deal, but they do everything that they need to do to make sure that the transition from an old Mac to a new Mac is as seamless as it can be.
Okay.
So let's talk about that, Benjamin. The first thing you need to do once you've come to the decision you need a new Mac is you need to say, well, what do I need? Where am I going to get it? I am very specific with my clients. And again, this is a your mileage may vary situation. So if you find something that works for you, I'm not going to tell you not to do it. But if you say to me, Keith, what should I do? Here's what I recommend. I recommend going to Apple's website. If you know what you need to get, the first thing you want to do, let's just say it's a MacBook, or it could be a desktop, but let's pretend it's a MacBook. Let's talk MacBook. The first thing you need to do is you need to ask yourself, well, what do I have now? Mm-hmm. If I have 8 gigabytes of memory in my computer, the first thing I'm going to recommend you do is bump that up to 16, because it doesn't need to be the exact same thing you have now. It needs to cover you for the next 5+ years of the next machine's ownership cycle. Mm-hmm. And then you need to look at how much storage space you've used. Let's say you've got 512 gigabytes in your MacBook right now, and you've used, you know, 300 or 400 of that. So let's say you've used 3/4 of the existing storage of your existing machine. One thing you need to remember is you're going to want to migrate or move all of the data on your existing machine onto your new one. So what does that mean? Well, it means that your new machine has to have at least as much as you have now, and then you need to allow for future growth. So if you've used most of the storage space in a 512 gigabyte machine, the next step would be to double that to 1 terabyte. Or if you've used most of 1 terabyte, double it to 2 terabytes.
So what if you've only used like 1/5 of the storage?
Well, I never recommend going backwards, because you never know what new app or new feature or functionality might come along and give you a reason to use what you have.
You know, I mean, and that's actually that's something that I follow as well. At least don't downgrade. You can stick exactly with the same if you are comfortably staying within that kind of range. I usually use 1/3. If you are 1/3 of your capacity, you can you can save by sticking with that same capacity.
Right. You can stick with it, but never go backwards. I mean, today, as a couple of baselines for the average user for a 5-year ownership cycle, I typically like to say that a Mac should have a minimum of 16 gigabytes of memory and a minimum of 1 terabyte of storage. Now, again, you may not use all of that all the time, but it's a good baseline. Then, once you have ordered this from Apple, you can order it right online. They will build it to your specifications, so that'll be your machine custom built for you, and they'll ship it to you for no additional charge. And then when you get your new machine, you open it in the box, rip it open, and go right to town. No, you don't. While you're waiting that week to 10 days for Apple to build your new machine and ship it to you, one of the things I wholeheartedly recommend doing, especially for those Mac users who have not been backing up their Mac using Time Machine along the way, is to buy an inexpensive hard drive that is the size of or slightly larger than the size of the total capacity of their present machine, and then run Time Machine and create a final backup of the old machine you're getting rid of.
Now, that's interesting. I would usually tell people the size of the new machine.
That could work as well. I mean, if you're jumping from 1 terabyte to 2 terabytes, then I would get a 2 terabyte external hard drive.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But it should be enough to back up what you have on the old machine and then carry that forward.
Sure.
And then if that drive is brand new, you can then make that your new backup drive for the new MacBook.
Yep. And that's why I would go with the larger size, the replacement size. Yeah.
Correct. And then once you have that backup, you plug the backup into your new Mac. And one of the things that will happen at the beginning, it will say, do you want to restore this machine from a Time Machine backup or another Mac? You could say yes from a Time Machine backup, and then it will migrate all of your data from the old machine to your new one. But not just moving all your files, your preferences, your settings, your installations, the way your dock is laid out, the desktop picture you had, where the files were sitting in your desktop. It will be like the machine has had a brain transplant, except it's now bigger, newer, faster, under warranty again, and have a whole plethora of new features.
I will tell you that is one of the few areas where I think Microsoft has dropped the ball. For years, we've had PC Mover available, and that's a third-party software, and it does all right. It does about a 90% job versus, in the Mac world, I love that. It's so much better.
Yeah, so for a Mac, you want to back up a Time Machine. iCloud is for backing up your mobile devices.
There you go. Little hints for you if you're buying a new Mac. This is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seedorf.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
Website ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and whatever your technology concerns may be. Marty Winston joins me now. Marty, what do you have for us this week?
Ben, you are familiar with the Dremel tools. You do dainty little work with them, and they're miniature.
Yeah, sometimes I exceed the level of delicate work that they're designed for, and I do get a little aggressive with them. But yeah, I use Dremel tools all the time.
Do you know who owns Dremel?
No, I don't.
It's Bosch, B-O-S-C-H.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
Now, nice. Bosch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bosch has always been a brand for some of the most macho hand-wielded tools that pros use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when I got in their new 18-volt brushless cutoff saw, I got to tell you, my excitement was tangible.
So this is like a Dremel tool, I'm guessing. It's a cutoff saw, so it's like a Dremel tool on some serious steroids. It's like...
On steroids. It's from the planet Krypton.
Okay, all right.
For one thing, it uses the largest, heaviest batteries I've seen so far in a tool designed to be held in both hands.
Okay, in both hands. It's a serious tool.
It fits 9-inch diameter diamond or abrasive cutting wheels.
Wow. Okay.
You can cut into concrete or steel to a depth of 3 1/3 inches with this.
Okay. And it's battery powered. Wow, all right.
And so well balanced. I can't begin to tell you.
Have you been slicing apart your driveway recently? What's the deal with this?
Thinking about the chimney got to go.
All right.
There's a wrench that tucks into a slot on the bottom of its rear handle for cutting wheel changes. Its no load speed is 6,200 RPM.
Nice.
That's more than 100 full spins per second. Meaning with a 9-inch diameter blade, that's more than 240 feet of cutting wheel edge exposure every second.
Wow. Just wow.
This is the most macho saw I've ever seen. There's a water hose inlet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because with that much heat on the blade, you want to keep water running.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That cooling stream of water flows from the back through the front. And by the way, there's also an LED headlight up front.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So you're seeing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And with all that heat, if there's something that may make you want to pause, you're going to see it twice. Once in the light and possibly once in what happens when the water's hitting that spot.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
All right. Now, let's see. There are times you may want to pause or slow down or back off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The balance is great. When I first hit the trigger, I was thinking, I hope I have enough muscle left in my arm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But there was no kick.
No kick.
Perfect, perfectly okay. Balanced, even with the thing spinning. I have to say, this is not for beginners or amateurs.
Sure, sure.
You need to know what you're doing when you're coming with this, because operator errors are the biggest cause of dangerous kickbacks.
Yeah, yeah.
And with a saw blade that can eat through those hard materials that quickly, there's nothing you can do that can stop it absolutely instantly. So yeah. If it kicks back toward you, hope your insurance is paid.
If it can cut through 3.5 inches of cement or steel, it's going to go through, we'll just say, softer things a lot faster.
Yeah. Now.
Yeah. Okay. So it definitely be careful with it. All right.
Yeah. Now, to help make it easier for humans to use,
mm-hmm.
there's a big rubbery block inside the battery compartment.
Mm-hmm. All right.
There's good rubber wraps on the front and rear insulated handles. Do wear pro-grade work gloves with this, yeah. Not to mention pro-grade eye protection.
Mm-hmm. I would say hearing protection, too.
Yeah. It's not that loud. It's battery.
Yeah, but when you're cutting into cement,
you get all the sonics and stuff, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Now, compared to other saws with this much power, this whole thing weighs less than 12 pounds with the battery out, so it is considered surprisingly lightweight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The Bosch 18-volt cutoff saw kit with two batteries and a charger are on Amazon for about $950.
Okay. All right. So this is some serious pro grade equipment. This is for people who are doing demo work. They're doing your typical home builder kind of.
Right.
Professional home builder. I'm not saying, at a home builder. Yeah.
And then again, if you're used to high level power equipment, you might want to use it to put water ruts in your driveway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To help direct where the water goes when otherwise it would look like a river.
Sure. So, yeah. Yeah.
I love Bosch stuff. This tool makes me feel male and human.
Superhuman, like a Superman, as you referenced earlier on. I get that. I do have some tools that are on the more aggressive side. Not a whole lot, because I actually personally hire in workers if they're going to do stuff like that. But the Dremel tool, that was cool hearing about them owning Dremel. So a new surprise for me. As for now, that's Marty Winston. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com.
site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And they try a number of different ways. Molly reached out to me, and she had received an email from someone who claimed to be a recruiter. And this is something that we get this all the time. We, if you are in the business world at all, if you have a job, you will get contacted by recruiters on a regular basis. And they reached out to her via LinkedIn, and she connected up with them. And they said, hey, we'd like to look over your resume. We think you might be a good fit for this. So she said, all right, I'm looking for a job. All right, why not? So she sent over the resume. A few days later, they got back to her, not about a job, not in regards to something that would put her back on some employer's payroll or maybe a contracting position or something like that. But instead, they gave her a warning. Her resume wasn't optimized for applicant tracking systems or automated tracking systems, depending on how you look at it, ATS, and that it might not even reach the hiring managers. And then, instead of telling her, that's okay, we still have a job lined up, we'll work with you on this, they had a pitch for her. We have a specialist who can fix it for you. We have someone who can rework your resume and make it absolutely perfect. And she almost fell for it. She reached out to me. She said, is this legit? Look, I'm going to tell you, in Molly's case, she'd been searching for a while. And when you go through this, it is easy to go through and doubt yourself. It's easy to say, you know what, maybe there is something to this. Maybe I do need to go through and purchase these services. I'll tell you, you're better off reaching out to a professional service, a company or an individual who does this for a living all the time. Somebody where you are opening up that conversation. And whether we're talking about just a resume rewrite or an overhaul or a career coach or something like that, whatever it is that you're going to be doing, I'm going to suggest you pick someone that you believe in, that you think is going to do the job for you and do it very well. Not somebody who's going to reach out of the blue and get a lot of information from you. I tell everybody on a regular basis, if somebody is reaching out to you online, cold, out of the blue, and they want you to utilize their services, you already need to ratchet up your concern by 100%. You need to already be very leery, very cautious of anything like this. Yes, there are plenty of real recruiters out there. There's plenty of real resume experts out there. But the key thing here is you need real advice, not some sales pitch coming out of the blue. If you're unsure of your resume, get feedback from real recruiters, real hiring managers, or people in your industry that you wholly believe in and trust. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Fortunately, someone is available to explain all this technobabble. I mean, technology. Your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact you, me, and all of our lives. And we try to bring up as many different topics along the way because technology has so many different ups and so many different downs, and it's a vast topic these days. Steve Keske joins me now, and he helps us make good on that idea of radio's broadest look at computers, technology, etc. And Steve, I know that you've talked on a number of different topics. When you said trains, I'm like, wait, how does technology and trains even intertwine? And as you were explaining it, well, go ahead.
You got to go from the old wood-burning pot, kettle pot,
yeah,
train through the diesels and the electrics, and now they got magnetic trains.
Sure.
And, you know, there's other parts to go with that. For instance, a number of years ago, the Northeast commuter trains were having a big problem, and they had a couple of major accidents.
Mm-hmm.
Because trains were going too fast around curves.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. So they basically employed computers to control the speed of the train so it didn't topple over. And other types of avoidance type things, technology go with that.
Yeah.
And so you have to really realize how technology, not only in the hardware from the trains, but our outlook on how much stuff we basically, besides people, that we shove around this country on trains.
Oh, yeah. If our railway system were to disappear all of a sudden, we would have everything crawl to a halt.
Oh, yeah.
A matter of, you know, the trucking industry is great for moving things locally. It is really good for certain items going across country.
Uh-huh.
But you've got a mile-long train, as an example, and that can move so much in the way of food and cars and goods around our entire country. It's just amazing stuff.
Oh yeah.
And
that goes for just about a whole lot of not only produce and products, but going from, hey, I'm taking it off of this ship and putting it in storage for a while, and then it goes onto a flatbed and maybe gets trucked to someplace, or you may be just putting it on a train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the whole thing, this the whole idea of that technology and sitting back and saying, wait a minute here. You know, we want this train to be more versatile in what we can put on it and have it transport.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, you look at everybody has received some type of delivery, and it's always in a box, and the box is almost always square. Why? Even if the stuff in it isn't square, yeah, the box is square because they fit real well in a boxcar.
Yes. Yes. And or in any kind of transport thing. Sure. It's just a nice, simple design. So we've got an entire history of trains. I mean, we look back at the early 1800s. I think trains started to cross over probably what in the 1840s, moving from kind of a novelty into something that is really really designed for moving people and produce and goods and all of that.
Think of in 1860 during the Civil War, mm-hmm, that trains were used for transporting not only military goods and supplies, mm-hmm, but also military units.
Yeah.
Put them on a train and gone.
Yeah. So, of course, back in those days, we're talking that was coal-powered trains moving through. And then, you know, one of the things that I've always found fascinating that people don't really know, there was, for a period of time, a short period of time, locomotives that were actually diesel engines, diesel-powered.
Yes.
But it wasn't very long before those diesel locomotives, the diesel wasn't actually driving, the diesel engine wasn't driving the wheels on the train. It was actually generating electricity, and the electricity was used to drive the train forward.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a fascinating thing for me. I mean, the first a diesel electric locomotive was somewhere in the 1920s. So a lot of the different trains we see around, yes, they're electric. You think it's diesel. It's loud. It's massively loud, and it's got all kinds of energy and in the rumbling around. But that's because it's converting it to electricity and providing just massive amounts of torque.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's this whole idea of the technology and as it grows, mm-hmm, that more and more, you know, converting it to electricity, to, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, to power the wheels and all this. And yet, mm-hmm, we have yet to redesign all of the tracks because they say, but it's not economical enough. It's too expensive.
Yeah, very true. The only, okay, so there's two cases where groups are looking to kind of go to the next step here in the United States. Mm-hmm. One of them is the state of California, which has really drawn a lot of negative attention because they've got their what was a high speed rail project going from Los Angeles up to Sacramento, San Francisco, somewhere in there,
something like that,
and they've spent $11 billion on this, and they've gotten a total of 1,600 feet.
Yes.
Not 1,600 yards, not
even a mile.
Not 1.6 miles, 1,600 feet. So there's no way you can get it up to high speed at that point. No. You're going to have to, okay, we started it. Okay, now we got to stop it.
Yeah.
The other folks, Elon Musk's venture, the Hyperloop. And now they've built more line for the Hyperloop than they have for the California High Speed Rail, which is absolutely hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I do know that a lot of us, we look to, like, the High Speed Rail over in Europe and the High Speed Rail over in Japan and other places. And there's a lot of fascination for me with that one. Have you ever had a chance to ride on any of those?
Not really.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I can't remember. I know I was on a train in Vegas, but I don't know if it was magnetic or not.
Oh, so the was that when we were there for CES?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, that was actually, it was magnetic. It was a monorail.
Oh, yeah.
System. I don't know how magnetic versus versus actual riding on tires on the monorail, but yeah, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you have to really get to the point where you're driving down the road and you go across a section of concrete road, mm-hmm.
yeah,
and you get that thump, 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 thump.
we're
same thing would hope will happen when you going down the road down in a train with tires that goes the thump, the thump.
Yeah.
Thump.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole another just thing of how they designed those.
Yes.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh, yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall-mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh, yeah, the promo. 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. Tobias reached out to me. I need to install software on my work computer to actually do my job, but it won't let me. This is ridiculous. How am I supposed to be productive if I can't use the tools I need? Tobias reached out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can do it, too. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Tobias's case, he wants to install software, but the system isn't letting him. And I get the frustration. This is a frustration that a lot of people have, especially as they get more technologically savvy. You know, a number of people out there, they go, they sit down at the computer, it's whatever software that's there, and they just do the tasks. But as we start to get further along, we understand those tasks, we find things that we want to do better, or we want to get more creative about our job and how we get from point A to point B. This can really frustrate a lot of people. I mean, it's like being handed a car, but you don't get the keys. You've got this big, huge machine, but you're stuck idling in the driveway. Well, the computer, or actually it's information technology, they're playing gatekeeper. And I get it. It's frustrating. But there are reasons for this, and there's ways to move forward without turning this into a big, huge battleground. First off, IT is not being difficult just for the sake of being difficult. There are security and compliance rules in play, and a lot of companies will lock down their version of Windows or their operating system, whatever is running there, so that they prevent things like malware or they prevent people from installing software unauthorized, for instance, licensed software or software that just like games. Anything that could be a conflict here for work or could actually break down company systems could be a concern here for IT, especially when we start going down roads like, let's say your industry deals with sensitive data. We're talking about medical data covered under HIPAA, financial data. And we start talking about a lot of different compliance issues there. There's legal, there's whatever it is. And it could be a matter of what your job is or whatever else. There could be compliance regulations that are legally preventing them from letting you install whatever software package you want. This is a regular case here. So one of the things that really becomes effective along the way is working through and checking into the approved request processes. So some IT departments there that are out there, they have formal channels for requesting new software. You should check into what kind of approval workflow that might be out there. And this is something that is very regular out there. You might be in a situation where IT, you just have to reach out to them and say, hey, I'd like this software. I found it here. It's a known software. It's very popular and it's free. Can I install this? And some IT workers may have the ability and power to allow you to do that. Some of them may have their own approval process and they go through the process of installing it for you. It's not necessarily a matter of, no, you can't have the software, but maybe you need to get somebody who's technologically savvy to go through that process for you. Now, if they aren't going to budge, ask them if they can whitelist the specific tool. They allow some kind of virtual machine or sandboxed environment where it's set aside. It's not going to damage all of the other systems. It's protected. Now, along the way, sometimes you have to make a good business case for that software. Instead of just saying, I need this, you should be addressing things like how the software is going to improve your efficiency, how it will benefit the company, and you should be doing some research into what the software is, if it's going to meet the security requirements, if it's going to be something that's going to be solid and people aren't going to have a problem with it. It's not going to break your system or anything like that. And sometimes it's a matter of you check with IT first, but if you set up one of these business cases, this is something you can take to your manager, your supervisor, and go, hey, I'd like to install this. IT isn't letting me, but here's my case for it. This is what I need. This is what I wanted to do. This is how it's going to really help me do my job better. And you sell it on that whole case there. Of course, some companies, the issue is a cost issue. So find out if there is an alternative that's already company approved. Find out something that perhaps is open source or free that does the same job and make that pitch on up. Now, another option, of course, these days, we've seen how software has moved from being installed directly onto our system to a cloud-based version. And sometimes there's portable versions that don't require installation. So we've got a few different directions to go with this. If it's a web-based tool, all you got to do is go to that website. I mean, sometimes you may find out that there might be browser issues. Oh, we can't let you go to that website. You may have a situation where your company is locked down the internet to a level where you can't proceed forward with that tool. See if there's alternative tools. I will tell you, for every software package out there that's a big name, there are smaller names that might be far more accessible for your situation just because they're a little bit different. So I use Microsoft Word. I use the Microsoft suite of products. But there are alternative versions of Word out there. OpenOffice, LibreOffice, and I forget which one is still around and still being developed. Photoshop has something called GIMP as a competitor, and it's a free competitor. It lags behind in some of the different things it can do, but not by much. So there's a lot of different directions we can go in. I will tell you that there is an important situation to keep in mind all the way along the way, and that is knowing when to pick your battles. And if you want to go forward, you want to make a pitch to install some gaming software, they're going to say no. Everybody's going to say no. But there are key cases where you can escalate that through your management. If IT is flat out refusing, you need to think, though, if this is that hill that is worth dying on, you need to figure out if you really should be moving this on up through, like I mentioned, to your manager, to the higher powers within your company to get it done. If you're going to save a matter of 5 seconds a day, it may not be worth it. If you've got a way, you know that you can increase efficiency in your department, you can get your job done faster by an hour each day, then those are key points. And those might be battles definitely worth pushing for, pushing forward through and getting to the goal of installing that software. Of course, if there's absolutely no way to get around any of this, you might think about a personal device for certain tasks, but you've also got to make sure that you're not violating company policies. For instance, many company policies say you can't take our data off of our computers and put it onto your own. But there are other directions. So think about this very carefully. At the end of the day, IT has a job, and that job is to keep your system secure, your servers secure, your network secure. They're not there to make your life harder. Even if it feels that way, you should probably seek to understand those concerns and frame your requests strategically. And if you do that, you're going to have a much better shot at getting the tools that you need without resorting to some kind of crazy tactics. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Nina's question, why do tech folks ask me the same questions I already answered on the ticket? And that's a good question. Nina reached out to me at computertalkradio.com. She scrolled down to where it says contact us today, and yes, I responded. And I'm going to address Nina's question again. Why do tech folks ask me the same questions I already answered on the ticket? And I'm going to relate this to an experience I just had very recently. I went into the doctor's office and I filled out a bunch of forms and provided the paperwork. And the paperwork was sitting right there on the desk as the doctor asked me a number of questions that were directly answered on the form. And I understood what he was doing. I understood that he wanted to ask me directly about the symptoms, even though I did fill it out. He wanted to make sure he was dealing with the situation in the proper way. He wanted to look at a number of different things about how I was answering them, the insight behind a lot of the things that were going on in that conversation with the doctor, and to make sure that he answered and addressed every question that I might have coming out of it. these tickets, whether you're using Remedy or ServiceNow or whatever other program out there, they do not contain the needed information that may be needed to solve the problem. Even if you write out a very well-written request, it may miss some of the details that come out of dealing with a human being. By watching their mannerisms, by reading a lot of what's going on with our human body. And yeah, a lot of nerds are not quite aware of things, but they get these senses. They're asking through all of the different questions. They get a sense out of what you're responding with that may steer them in a different direction, that may spark ideas in their mind just based off of the actual wording that you're doing. Oh, hey, you asked this. Maybe you're thinking about that. Maybe that actually is where I should be chasing after instead of the dry written responses that were given when you were filling out the electronic form. Now, I will admit, I don't believe the doctor read any of my responses on the form, but in a fast-paced environment, a doctor or an IT technician will need to triage all of this as they go along. Additionally, we get a lot of chances as technicians, and as the doctor did with me, to clarify certain things, to ensure the accuracy that is going on here. Sometimes what was written down on that piece of paper and what is happening now doesn't match up with everything else that's going on. So my questions for the doctor were far more in regards to follow-up, whereas something was happening a long time ago, and my entire body has changed a bit in the 6 years or so since I last went in regards to this particular issue. Same thing happens with computers and technology. That question that you answered a matter of a day ago may have evolved into a different direction, may have additional things that are going on there. So as a technician, we want to be accurate. As a computer professional, we want to address your problem and other problems as well. We're about finding everything we can to fix the issue at hand. And your answers will help spot a lot of different patterns. Hearing this in your own words may reveal something brand new, may reveal things that they may not have even thought to ask. Hey, while you're answering that, I just thought of this. Have you addressed that? Have you gone through this particular process? Maybe we should approach this from a different level. Remember, IT professionals, just like doctors, have a lot more experience in whatever field that they're specializing in. So it really helps to just go through these things again, even if it is a word-for-word repetition of what you just said. And that's something I've experienced a number of times where I give the problem to the IT person and they give it back to me verbatim as I said it to them. So if I understand this correctly, your computer is doing X, Y, and Z. All right, yes. Yeah, very true. And you know what? Actually, now that I think of it, it's also doing Q. And that actually starts to elicit more information towards what the problem is. Of course, they can spot a lot of these patterns like, oh, yeah, I had this problem, this exact same problem a month ago and a month prior to that and a month prior to that. So we start getting to the bottom of things. We start getting to the root of whatever your problem is, and we can address the overall problem versus just the incident. And the difference is here is the incident is what you're reporting right now. The problem is the fact that you had this issue, this incident a month ago, the prior month, and so forth. So I'm asking you, please, whether you're dealing with your doctor or your IT technician, your car mechanic, whoever it is, be patient with them. All of this, everything I've described here, is part of a diagnostic process where we go through, we verify the symptoms before we act upon them. Because if we don't verify them, we can prevent worse issues later on down the line. All of this, a repeat question, isn't doubt. It isn't some concern other than doing due diligence. I want you to think about this as a quality check. I want you to think about this as just making sure that we are all communicating on the same level as best we can. It's never a slight. It's never something that's meant to annoy you or disturb you or anything like that. It's all about making sure we fix the issue. Not just now, but as far as we can for all time. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and a lot more in regards to both of those. Now, last week, I talked about Reid Hoffman, and he is a co-founder of LinkedIn, and he had a statement out there, and one of the phrases, one of the things that he approached was work-life balance is not the startup game. And I talked a lot about the difference between those two worlds. And I want to take you on kind of this journey through the realm of the IT worker. And this is kind of where some of this gets stuck. And I want you to think about you being an IT worker. It's 11:47 p.m. The lights are off, the family's asleep, and your face is just lit by the soft, judgmental glow of all of the monitors in front of you. You weren't supposed to be online, just a quick check to make sure that the backup job run or the system install is going okay or whatever it is, but something doesn't look right. So you dive in, and next thing you know, it's 2:00 in the morning and your heart's racing because something else is acting up and no one else on your team understands that ancient configuration. This isn't a war room moment. This isn't an emergency text from the CEO. There's no drama, no recognition. It's just the quiet, creeping expectation that someone, you, the IT worker, is going to keep the lights on. And this is kind of a rough area. This is a realm where IT workers often get treated like they're in the eye of that startup tornado that we talked about last week. Even when the company's been around for 20 years, IT workers are frequently called upon to hustle like a founder. They're expected to be on call like somebody who is starting up a brand new company, and they're supposed to sacrifice all kinds of hours, day and night and weekends, like they've got a lot of stake in everything that's going on. But let's be honest here. on a company that's been around for anything longer than about 5 years, there isn't going to be any Series A payday waiting on the other side. No equity windfall. No invite to the boardroom. The world. All of us. We expect IT to be on because the systems are always on. But people aren't servers. We don't auto-scale. IT workers do burn out. And that is a rough thing there. This is something that causes a lot of churn within the IT portion of many companies out there. We've got that burned out system admin who stopped double checking alerts because nothing ever changes. That sleep deprived development engineer who's writing code. He is duct taping together just one more code pipeline with a certain level of silent despair. And then there's that veteran IT lead who's always available because they haven't had time to train any backups in the last 3 years. And this is human debt. It's invisible until it breaks. Tech debt is very similar. It's where we start working systems way beyond their lifetime. And when we do that with computers, we wind up with an outage. When we do that with IT workers, it's a resignation letter, and it's somebody who we really should have held on to because they have knowledge of the company going back a long ways. All of the different little nuances, the little bits and pieces of duct tape and baling wire and chewing gum and Band-Aids that are holding everything together. Okay, let's clear this up. Working in IT at a large, stable company isn't a startup. We're not talking about being in the garage. We're not talking about being Steve Jobs or Steve Wozniak and working out a dream. This is all about just doing some work-life balance. There are many mature companies out there, and I see this, I hear this from my peers on a regular basis. They say, just stay a little later. This migration is critical. We're counting on you. Only you know this system. We'll get you help next quarter, next month, next year. Right now, we just need you to power through. The language is always temporary, but the demand just keeps going. And it's exhausting. And it's unsustainable. Look, everybody should be thinking about how we reward those IT workers. How do we reward uptime instead of firefighting? How do we create space for long-term thinking and developing new ideas? Because those IT workers, they can be creative. They're nerds. They thrive on challenges if they have the time for them. So if you're an IT worker, I want you to speak up before you burn out. I want you to document, to delegate. And the hardest thing of all, because I'm an IT worker too, I've been doing this for a very long time, you do need to find out where to draw the line. No one's indispensable, but you are irreplaceable to the people who love you outside of work. You're not the failover plan for this company. You're not a high availability cluster. You're not built for 99.999% uptime. You are a human being with dreams, with limits, and a life. And this is something both for the IT workers, but for everybody else out there. Assess this. See if perhaps your IT worker can do with a little bit more help, a little bit more support, and perhaps even some guidance. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround.
In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround.
Nathan reached out to me, why do I have to subscribe to everything now instead of just buying it once? And he's got a point there. And we are seeing a distinct trend towards the fact that we don't own anything. We're just borrowing it for a fee. We're renting it, like renting a car instead of owning one. All of these different subscriptions keep all of us paying indefinitely instead of just making that a single investment. I will tell you, I watch Netflix every night to go to sleep. I've got a couple of movies that I'll pull up, and eventually those movies will go off and I'll load up another movie. And this is how I just kind of drown out the thoughts in my head. But Netflix has replaced what I started off with. Well, earlier it was DVDs, but even before that it was VHS tapes, and before that it was cassette tapes. And I would listen to the same thing each night to go to sleep. Businesses make so much more money with recurring payments than one-time purchases. You probably have noticed a lot of movies are no longer available on DVD, or the DVDs have gone up in price. That's because they've moved it over into that subscription model. All of the movie companies, they're working out deals with Amazon Prime or Hulu or Netflix or whoever else to make sure that their movie gets out there. And they make those deals, and they're making more money off of that than they were off of DVDs. So these subscription models allow for continuous updates, but often at the expense of true ownership. We have really arrived at a point where we're no longer going to own anything. We're just borrowing it. We're just getting it for a subscription. There have been ideas floated that we will buy a car, we'll own that car, but we will subscribe to certain features within that car. There have been a few different manufacturers that have talked about charging for CarPlay and Android Auto. One particular company, heated seats. Another company for expanded power for your engine. And they can do that by just a software update of saying, oh yeah, you used to have 200 horsepower. Now you've got the full 400 horsepower. Even though all of the hardware is sitting right there, they can control that. Today, yes, we can still get lifetime licenses for software. If you know where to look, we can still go in a number of different directions, like open source software. And some of this open source software is free, and that's a way to avoid the subscription trap. We can go out and we can still buy a lot of movies with physical media, but not all of them. And that is slowly reducing, and we can still buy music as well, but that also is slowly reducing in favor of, hey, you give us $10 a month and we will give you all the music you can stream. Yeah, I'm not sure it's all that great, but it's something we're going to have to just deal with. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the radio Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.